This episode was recorded in September of 2023. Some personal updates and cultural references may be out of date, but the history hasn't changed, and our humor, as you know, is timeless. Enjoy. This is Hashtag History, episode 132. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And for my first episode of our season 14, I wanted to talk about something that I am sure all of us are aware of, although many of us may not know the origins of it. Mm-hmm. We here in the United States, as well as a number of other countries, have a system known as the Amber Alert. I'm sure all of our American listeners, and maybe some of our international listeners too, are nodding their heads along right now, thinking back to a time when they saw an Amber Alert scroll across the bottom of their TVs, saw it on a billboard along the freeway, or were terrified when it loudly came across as an alert on their phone.
Yeah.
Essentially, what an Amber Alert is an emergency alert message that goes out via television, radio station, text message, and more in the event of a child abduction. The alert will include information such as the possible name and description of the potential abductor, as well as a description of their vehicle, including the license plate number, if this information is known. Mm-hmm. All of this is in an attempt to get help from the public in returning the child to their home as quickly as possible. If you happen to be driving along the freeway and see the wanted vehicle, you can call it into your local police station and help make an arrest much sooner than the police could do on their own. Now again, this is a system that most, if not all, of us in the United States are familiar with. It's a system that's been in place nearly my entire life, having been established in 1996. But what many people don't know are the origins of Amber Alert and what led to such a system being put in place. Do you know about it?
I know it was named after someone named Amber.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I know.
And that's all that I knew before doing the research for this episode. On January 15th, 1996, a 9-year-old girl named Amber Renee Hagerman went missing in Arlington, Texas. She and her younger brother had been riding their bikes together, but when Amber rode further ahead than expected, her brother turned back around and went home. Minutes later, when Amber still had not returned home, an investigation was launched, and it was determined that a man in a pickup truck had abducted her from an abandoned grocery store parking lot. Her body was discovered 4 days later.
Oh, no.
To this day, her murderer is still unknown, and her case remains unsolved. This is what we will be discussing in this week's episode.
Yay.
I know. I'm sorry about that. We'll be discussing the tragic abduction and murder of Amber Hagerman, the investigation into this tragedy, and the ultimate creation of the Amber Alert system, including some of the incredible success stories to have resulted from the system working, because as your groan already kind of indicated, we're going to need some good news and levity
totally.
After discussing such a horrendous event.
Yes.
If you have been with us for a long time, if you are a seasoned hashtag history listener, hey girl, hey, you know that one of the things we like to do on this podcast is enjoy a cocktail with each episode. However, as we have said many a time before, partaking in a drink alongside discussion of such an awful event is not to make light of said event. Rather, it is more so to bring a little levity to an already awful situation.
Absolutely.
Having said that, we do have a couple of drinks prepared here in front of us that I personally cannot wait to dive into. So let's do that.
Yay.
Woo-hoo. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And this is Hashtag History,
the podcast for both history nerds and history haters alike,
where we dive into history's greatest stories of controversy, conspiracy, and corruption.
This week's cocktail was kindly sponsored by Christine, who said, quote, "I appreciate how you two have gotten me actually interested in history for the first time in my life.
Yay!
Love everything you do, the variety of subjects you cover, and how you even take into account listener suggestions. Enjoy your cocktail."
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Christine.
That's the whole point of the podcast, is to get people that were not previously interested in history interested mm-hmm. in history. So
yep.
I'm so happy to hear that. And we do love listener suggestions.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Those are always welcome.
We have so many topics that we want to do, but there's also so many that we aren't even on our, you know, aren't even thinking of them.
Yes.
We're not aware of them.
Yes.
or haven't thought of them. So your suggestions mean a lot.
Yes.
And I do believe we actually will enjoy the cocktail this week, because I personally started us out on ones that sound yummy this season intentionally.
as we normally do.
But I do have like a caveat to that, which I will insert in a moment.
Okay.
So this week's cocktail, obvious, very easy correlation. It's called the Amber cocktail.
Oh,
yeah. Just
it is kind of an amber color.
Yeah, I think based on the color of it is what it's named after. Mm-hmm. So it contains 4 slices of ginger root, or I actually did like grated ginger mm-hmm. root instead. That way I didn't have to mash it.
I 100% understand
I hate
that.
Mashing. Mm-hmm. 1.5 ounces of, it's supposed to be bison grass vodka. The name brand is Zbroka. And I have kind of a story about this. Well, I'll go into the history of this type of specific vodka in a moment, but I went to 3 or 4 different Total Wine and Mores in our area, which they're not near each other.
No.
They're very spread out. And when I say like in our area, I mean like
the greater Sacramento
region, which is
big.
Big. Mm-hmm. It can take like 1.5 hours to drive from one store to the other.
It does. Mm-hmm.
And so over the last 1.5 weeks, I've been literally going into researching, trying to find where to get this. And the only store that carries it in our area is Total Wine and More, except every single one, it was out of stock, or it had like one in stock. But by the time we got there, I even tried to get Rachel to get it for us at her Total Wine and More, which is pretty close to her here. Mm-hmm. No.
The closest one that there is available to us is in San Mateo, which is about 1.5 hours from us. So we didn't do that.
Yeah. So anyways, I looked into like what that particular liquor kind of flavor profile mm-hmm. was. And it says it has like a kind of almost like vanilla-y flavor. So my workaround was just to do regular vodka with like a little bit of vanilla extract. It's not going to be as good, but there it is.
It sounds good to me.
Okay.
It sounds good to me. It sounds cheaper.
It sounds, because let me also say this particular brand of vodka is $30 pot. Ooh. So
yeah.
So then what else is in this cocktail? 4 ounces of apple juice.
Yummy.
Yum. 1/2 ounce of sugar syrup. Yum. And then 1/2 ounce of apple schnapps or liqueur. And we did green apple schnapps.
It looks good. It smells good.
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, you're nervous about the vodka vanilla.
The substitute I'm very nervous about.
But I think it sounds and looks amazing.
Great.
Yes.
So yeah, you're supposed to shake all those up in a shaker with ice and then strain it into a glass filled with crushed ice specifically, it says.
Perfect.
So we have crushed ice here.
Okay.
So even though I couldn't buy it, I did want to go into just a little background and history on the bison grass vodka. An article about it that I found on eater.com said that it is pronounced Zbroka.
Okay.
The vodka itself calls on over 400 years of history and is made from rye, as are almost all Polish vodkas, apparently.
Oh.
And then infused with a specific grass, which is native to northeastern Poland. And that was another reason I wanted to do it.
I was just going
to
say, is there a reason that you were interested in Poland?
I don't know. apparently, the grass contains a chemical called coumarin, which apart from being used to flavor tobacco and cakes, amongst other things, also has certain medicinal values, such as being a blood thinner.
Oh, wow.
So a little health benefit drink, except not.
If you need your blood to be thinned, if you do not, do not.
Right.
If you do not, do not.
Yeah. So Zbroka became popular after the Polish-Lithuanian Accord in 1569, when the Polish royal court would rest at various hunting lodges in the Białowieża forest on their way to the northeast.
That is cool.
Yeah. And it was a lucrative export product during the communist period and is once again regaining popularity, obviously. Mm. Now,
yeah, obviously,
since it's sold out everywhere,
too much popularity.
Yeah, so even though this vodka was going to be crazy expensive, more expensive than I've ever spent on a bottle of mm-hmm. alcohol, especially for this podcast, I really wanted to buy it because it has ties to both Poland and Lithuania, which covers half of my ancestry. So let's just pretend.
Yeah, and Christmas is coming up.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, so I'll buy you a bottle, but
no,
so our listeners buy her a bottle.
Yeah, buy me a bottle.
Christmas is coming up. Well, I'm excited. Let's just do this thing.
Okay,
cheers.
I'm very nervous. It's good. It's not good. It kind of tastes like grass. Am I wrong?
I'm not.
It tastes like grass smells. It's really not good.
It's
not bad. Like, I'll drink it.
Do you think it's not? It can't. It's not the vanilla.
It has a grassy bite to it. Like, I would never drink this again. It's pretty gross, but it's also not like the.
It's certainly not the worst thing that we've ever had on this podcast.
Drink it. Yes. Like, I can drink it easily.
If I were to get this at a bar, I'd be like, okay. I feel bummed that I spent $13 on it, but I spent $13 on it. So I'm going to finish it.
I'm going to mostly chug it.
I'm going to mostly give it to my husband.
Yep. I don't know if you want to subject him to that.
What is it?
It's the combo. It's the green. It's the apple schnapps mixed with vanilla. That's weird.
I guess you were right. Before we started recording, I was like, no, it's going to be fine.
You're like, that sounds great.
It's going to be great.
And the ginger? Maybe it's the ginger.
It's the ginger. I forgot there was ginger in this.
Ginger with apple? So even if we had put the correct stuff in there, I think ginger and apple is weird.
So
you do not need to finish it.
That's
going to
be like
a
4?
Yeah. 4.5.
Four, okay. 4.25.
Because I'm going to finish it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, it's a drink, so you should.
Yeah.
I thought that I had had more of it than I did. And I'm looking at my glass and it's still pretty full. And I felt that I had taken a handful of sips.
I like keep going to put it down and then I'm like, oh, God, I got to drink
well,
more.
Well, you might need it for this episode.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. So that was a bummer, especially because you anticipated us liking it.
At least it's on theme. Bummer.
As is not uncommon for me, I was inspired to do an episode about this topic because of a recent documentary I watched. Always, always, always. As a lot of our listeners know, I recently had twin daughters, which means prior to having said daughters, I was fortunate enough to have a couple of weeks of maternity leave in which I almost could not move and therefore consumed a lot of television, aka watched the last two seasons of Love is Blind. Yeah, and no. Yikes.
Yeah, she was hardcore, like play by play texting me.
Yes.
Like moment by moment. I was getting a play by play.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I don't even have an excuse other than that. Like my pelvic bone was splitting in half. So I was just sitting on a bed all day.
Yeah.
And watching Love is Blind, my God. If anyone out there watches it, please message us. I
please.
I beg you, because I have to talk about the cringe with someone else as well.
Yeah.
So, other than Love is Blind, one such show that I consumed during this time was a documentary on Peacock called Amber, The Girl Behind the Alert. Mm. Which, this is just a side note, but a good reality check if anyone out there is pregnant or planning to have kids in the future. I watched this documentary for the first time while on maternity leave, but before I had had the kids, right?
Yes.
After having the kids, I wanted to watch the documentary one more time so I could take better notes to use this podcast for this episode. Mm-hmm. It took me 10 weeks to finish the documentary the second time after having the kids. Mm. So again, the babies are great. I love them. I wouldn't change anything. I'm happy they're here.
Take a little bit of your time.
They keep you busy. Mm-hmm, they do. So that's just a little reality check that it did indeed take me 10 weeks to complete something that took me an hour to complete before having kids.
Right.
Anyway, I highly recommend the documentary to anyone that is into true crime or even just to anyone that is interested in the historical aspect of this unfortunate piece of modern American culture. It not only does a great job of detailing what exactly happened that fateful week in January of 1996, it also helps to put you in the shoes of the people that experienced this horrible tragedy, namely Amber's mother, Donna. And really, you get a sense for how much the loss of her daughter changed not only her, but changed American society. What's also really neat about this documentary is how much footage they have of this family. Apparently, just 5 months before the tragic incident that we'll be discussing in this episode occurred, a documentary crew had actually begun filming the family because they were making a documentary about women getting off of welfare, which Amber's mother was. So they have endless footage of this family showing Amber playing with friends, showing Amber sitting around the dinner table, showing her at her birthday party, and so on.
That feels like weird.
We're going to talk about that. Okay. I feel like I could see it on, I was like holding my hand up like pause.
Yeah.
Because I know
he might as well have done the like finger to the lips.
Mm-hmm. I can hear your brain working and I know where it's going and we're going to talk about it.
Okay.
But the level of footage that this documentary crew got and then therefore used, you know, it was eventually used in this Peacock documentary. It just makes it all so much more real. It makes a difference to be able to see this little girl in motion.
Yeah.
Versus just looking at some grainy still photos of her. This documentary really was good, and I definitely have it listed in the sources that we used to put together this episode, which are, as always, available for you to view on our website. Now to January 1996. That's where we're going to begin. It was January 16th, 1996, and 9-year-old Amber Hagerman was taking the bike she had just received for Christmas out for a ride. As was pretty common for Amber and her 5-year-old brother, Ricky, the two of them took off from her grandparents' house and traveled the no more than 0.2 miles from the home. On this particular day, though, Amber decided to ride on ahead, further than the two of them ever had, to an abandoned Winn-Dixie grocery store parking lot. This parking lot had what a lot of kids used as a ramp for their bikes. It's like one of those, I don't know how to describe it really. It's a ramp or like an elevated walkway that like delivery trucks use, you know, like you push the dolly on them. A lot of kids, since it was an abandoned parking lot, a lot of kids used it as like a bike ramp.
Yeah.
And so Amber, she decided to ride on, but Ricky, who was afraid of getting in trouble for traveling further than they were supposed to, returned home without her.
Sounds like me.
I know, it sounds like me. When their grandpa saw that Ricky was alone, the two of them went together to go get Amber, but found only her bike left behind in the abandoned parking lot.
God, could you imagine?
Especially because, you know, and we'll talk about the time frame of this, just how long it took. We'll talk about that shortly, but it was very fast. It was like the second Ricky came home and grandpa's like, where's Amber? Oh, she's not with you? All right, hop in the car, kid. Let's go get your sister.
How old? 9 years old in 96. So she was only a couple years older than us.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I was thinking that too. Amber's family had no idea what had happened to her when they found this bike in the abandoned parking lot. Mm-hmm. But a 78-year-old man named Jimmy Kevel did. Kevel, who had been near the parking lot at the time, witnessed a dark-haired man in his 20s or 30s pull up in a pickup truck and grab the girl. As Kevel told the police, the man had, quote, pulled up, jumped out, and grabbed her. When she screamed, I figured the police ought to know about it, so I called them, unquote.
Yeah.
Good thinking.
Yeah. Thanks, Kevel.
You see a girl screaming and being thrown into a vehicle?
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a great idea.
Seems like common sense, but I'm glad you thought you were doing above and beyond.
Between the time Amber and Ricky left the house and the time that Amber was abducted, only 8 minutes had passed.
Oh my gosh.
Hey there. Are you long on curiosity but short on time? Want to learn about history but can't make it through hours of dialogue? Then I hope you join me, Alicia, as I cover historical topics and the time it takes you to enjoy a cup of coffee. Each week on my show, Civics and Coffee, I chat about United States history in short, bite-sized episodes. You can find Civics and Coffee on your favorite podcasting app or through my website at www.civicsandcoffee.com. I can't wait to share a cup of coffee with you. See you soon.
Amber's case became explosive. Both the local police and the Federal Bureau of Investigations worked tirelessly on the case. As the New York Times wrote, authorities, quote, paused their search for Amber only to take quick naps, unquote. Her picture was plastered on the front page of newspapers, and her story was covered on news stations across the country.
Yeah, that just the one thing I just want to note here is I think our friend Danielle, who is a criminal justice professor, actually at the same university I work at, she discusses very often and mentions to us very often missing white woman syndrome.
Yes,
and yeah, it just makes me wonder, like, would this effort and nationwide news stories be going on for someone, a minority girl?
And fortunately, this is something we talked about off air just before we started recording. There has been progress in that regard that we will get to towards the end of this episode. But I certainly agree that, you know, while Amber deserved as much recognition
absolutely.
As she received, so do other people.
Everybody so, deserves the same level of effort that was given to Amber.
100%.
Yeah.
Sadly, all of this effort and attention that was given to Amber would not matter.
Mm-hmm.
4 days later, a man walking his dog along a creek just 4 miles from the grocery store found Amber's body in a condition that we will not be discussing on this podcast. Like we shared in the intro, her abductor has never been found. 27 years later, and her case remains unsolved. Detectives say they continue to receive tips about her murder even to this day. Arlington Police Sergeant Grant Gildon has said that, quote, a lot of people will refer to Amber's case as what's commonly referred to as a cold case, but for the Arlington Police Department, it has never been listed as a cold case because we've never gone 180 days without having some lead come in.
Wow.
Unquote. That's pretty crazy for a case that's nearly 3 decades old.
Yeah.
That at least every 180 days, they're receiving some kind of lead that they're following up on.
Wow.
One officer in particular had an interesting theory about who the killer was based on the direction that the kidnapper went after driving out of the parking lot. We know because of the eyewitness that he went west. West was going back toward town, which I think if you just think of going into town, you can imagine it's more of a congested area. Yeah. There's stop signs and there's other traffic and stuff. Why would the kidnapper risk getting stuck in a congested area if not that he was a local who was familiar with the area and or that he was taking Amber back to a specific location?
Absolutely, yeah.
If he had been an out-of-towner, it was thought that he would have instead gone east, which would have taken him to the highways and out of town ASAP. Mm-hmm. There was also a theory that perhaps Amber had been specifically targeted by someone who had seen television footage of her. This is what I felt like your brain was churning.
That has to tie in that there's a documentary about her family. Yeah. And then.
Yeah. And they had this documentary had been following her and her family around. Yeah. And it very much highlighted Amber and who she was as a little girl.
Yeah.
So perhaps someone had seen the documentary and had targeted her because of that.
Yeah.
It was discovered, however, that none of the footage had been aired yet.
Oh, okay.
In fact, the documentary was scheduled to air just 1 week after Amber's abduction, something that, in light of her murder, obviously never happened.
I'm glad they had the good taste to do that.
Yes. And in fact, I don't think I'd talk about this later if I remember correctly, but the woman, like the director of this documentary, she became pretty good friends with Amber's mom.
Uh-huh.
And so when she learned, because she had been filming this family for months.
In their house, living with them, essentially.
Yeah. And so she was there for like all of, she sat with her for those 4 days that she didn't know where her daughter was. She was there when, you know, they positively identified her body. And even in this, the documentary, the Peacock documentary that I watched, they reconnected after nearly 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And so she has like stayed involved in this family's lives.
Yeah, I mean, she was there right at the onset of mm-hmm. one of the worst.
I would say the worst
moment of their life.
100%. So. Now, stranger abductions make up less than 1% of child abductions. It's much more common for a child to be abducted by someone they know.
Mm-hmm.
But after looking into those closest to Amber, including her estranged father and a family friend, alibis cleared them all.
Mm.
Police even staked out at Amber's funeral in an attempt to find the murderer there. But this was nearly impossible as the sensationalism and devastation surrounding Amber's case drew in more than 2,000 attendees.
That's a little icky to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I understand mm-hmm. being invested and interested in something like this and even wanting to support the family in mm-hmm. some way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a little icky to attend a funeral.
Those are so intimate.
Yeah.
Especially the funeral of a little girl. That is so intimate.
Yeah.
Or should be so intimate.
That feels icky.
Regardless of all of these theories and efforts, the police still have not discovered Amber's murderer to this day. As of 2021, investigators say they have followed up on approximately 7,000 tips. But still, no answers.
Yeah.
I mean, we both do feel deeply for her family, for the loss that they suffered, and for the closure that they still do not have. Watching the documentary, Amber's mother, Donna, becomes very, very real to you.
Mm.
When Amber was abducted, Donna was in medical school, but had to take a leap of absence, given everything going on.
Yeah.
When she returned to school, she said she was doing it for Amber. And in that documentary, you get to see this picture of Donna. She's graduating. She's wearing a cap and gown, and she has a pin with Amber's face on it, on her chest.
Yeah.
From this tragedy, however, seeds were planted for ways to better protect children. Donna, along with Amber's father, Richard, established an organization called People Against Sex Offenders, and they were able to successfully get the Texas legislature to pass laws in order to better protect children.
Mm-hmm.
They got the Amber Hagerman Child Protection Act, the act that established the National Sex Offender Registry, passed and signed into law by President Bill Clinton in 1996. A local Texas resident, Deanna Simone, had been so moved by Amber's case that she too moved to create change. She was quoted as saying, quote, "I can't get over this child. There has to be something we can do," unquote. She feared that if Americans already received alerts for other types of things, such as weather updates, why shouldn't we receive alerts for things such as missing children? She began her proposal with a call to the local KDMX radio station and suggested that everyday people, average citizens, could and should be a part of the search for missing children.
Mm.
The radio station agreed with this suggestion, and as a result, for the following 2 years, other local radio stations in the Dallas-Fort Worth area worked alongside law enforcement to announce on-air alerts for abducted children. This system, originally referred to by Simone as Amber's Plan, eventually received the name Amber Alert. Amber, of course, referring to Amber Hagerman, but also Amber as an acronym for America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response.
It's kind of perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
The Arlington Amber Alert System was first put to the test in 1998, 2 years after it had been established. An eight-week-old baby named Rayleigh Bradbury, went missing after having been left with her babysitter. At the end of the day, when her mom went to go pick her up, her mom found that the babysitter had taken off with her. Yes. An Amber Alert was issued, and within roughly 30 minutes of the broadcast, the babysitter, along with the baby, had been located driving on the freeway. I tried to get the 911 audio from this. They played in the documentary, and I couldn't find it isolated from the documentary. It was like too much work to try to find it and get it added to this. But it's cool because it's like you can hear the guy that finds her. He's like driving on the freeway and he calls the police.
Yeah.
And it's just cool hearing like almost the excitement and like disbelief in his voice where he's like, I'm right behind her. Like, he's like, oh my God, this is her. I found her. Oh my God. Like, he's like, there's a baby in the car with her. And it's like cool to hear the excitement that this guy has that he was able to bring resolution and this baby home to her family.
Yeah.
Given the success of this particular case, other jurisdictions would likewise employ a similar system to help locate abducted children. But by 2001, 5 years after Amber's abduction, only 4 states actually had adopted the Amber Alert system.
That's so crazy. I felt like it was always there.
Yeah, because it pretty much always has been for our lifetime.
Yeah, but also, I mean, 2001, that was 9/11, right? Like,
I see what you're saying. Like, yes.
By 2001, I remember that time period in my life, right?
Yes.
And I would have thought the Amber Alert system was already fully in place.
And it just goes to show how long it takes to implement change, because who would be against this? Like, why was this not established earlier? Who would be against doing everything you can and making every possible effort to return abducted children home? This would all change in 2003 when then President George W. Bush signed into law the Protect Act, which gave law enforcement departments the tools and resources needed in order to officially create a nationwide Amber Alert system. Mm-hmm. And in 2005, Hawaii became the last state to adopt the program.
Nice.
According to a detective that has worked Amber's case, quote, "It doesn't bring Amber back for Donna, but at least there's something that she can look at and recognize that her daughter has at least helped so many other kids," unquote.
Absolutely.
31 other countries have also now adopted the Amber Alert system, which is something that was new to me when I was doing this research. I thought Amber Alert was a U.S., United States thing. I didn't realize it was other countries have also adopted the same system.
Yeah, that's really cool to know that they've, taken that on and that her memory and her impact goes even further.
Yeah. It's estimated that in 74% of child abduction cases, the child is killed within the first 3 hours. In the 1990s, when Amber went missing, the quickest way to disseminate information about a child abduction was via the evening news. So if a child was abducted in the morning, for example, and this information was not released until that evening on the television, it was perhaps already too late. Mm-hmm. And what I was just about to add is that's also assuming he watched the news, because a lot of people don't watch the news. And even then, even in times before we got news alerts on our phone, there's a lot of people that make intentional decisions not to watch the news. Mm-hmm. So it's just assuming you even watched the news. Even if you did, 74% of the time, it's already too late. These statistics alone help to reinforce the need for systems such as Amber Alert. Amber's mother, Donna, certainly wishes that something like Amber Alert had been in place when Amber went missing back in 1996. She said in an interview 20 years after her murder, quote, "There's another part of me that wonders what would have happened if we would have had the alert when Amber went missing. Could it have helped bring her back to me?" Unquote.
Yeah.
To this day, Amber Alert has helped save over 1,000 children with a success rate of 97%.
Wow.
It has inspired other types of alerts to be created, such as a silver alert, which is an alert sent out when an elderly person has gone missing or is at risk. Mm-hmm. Or as recently as earlier this year, we kind of talked about this briefly, in 2023, California proposed a bill for an ebony alert, which would be an alert system specifically created to alert the public when Black women and children have gone missing. Of the more than 540,000 people reported missing last year, 36% of them were Black women and children. Mm-hmm. Amber Hagerman has certainly left a mark on history, although of course due to an event her family desperately wishes had never happened.
Yeah.
If you or anyone you know has any information whatsoever about the Amber Hagerman case, please call the Arlington Police Department at 817-274-4444. Amber and her family deserve justice. Until the day they receive it, though, I know that I will always remember the girl behind the story and the origins of the Amber Alert system. you all so much for listening to this episode of Hashtag History.
All sources used to put together this episode can be found on our website at hashtaghistory-pod.com.
Subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you use, share about us with your family and friends, and then give us a rate and review.
And be sure to check us out on Instagram at #history_podcast.
And come join us over on Patreon if you would like. It's only $1 a month to help support our books and booze supply. You also get access to some behind-the-scenes content, an automatic 15% off all merchandise, and we mail you cards and stickers.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Quote. It feels like common sense, but I'm glad you think you did above and beyond. That's so good. That feels like that should be on like a t-shirt or something.
1, 2, 3. I don't like this.
It doesn't look good.
Hold on. Maybe I'm just super zoomed in.
And also, I need to talk a little bit to see. No, mine looks the
okay,
same as last
time. Okay,
I
was just time. So zoomed in.
Do we want to start all over?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Are you still recording?
I am. Are you?
Yeah.
Do we want to clap again?
No.
Okay.
It was going. It was okay. Just so zoomed in that I couldn't.
I've 100% done that before. Mm-hmm. Hold on.
I have to get this shirt. I think it's really broken.
I don't need to pretend.
Yeah. Too bad.
I don't know what this one.
That's too bad.
The Federal Bureau of Investigators. They changed their name.
Yeah.